Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, a high-ranking NASA engineer joins us to talk about the Perseverance rover landing on Mars. But up front, many of us are in the middle of or plan to file our 2020 income tax returns. If we know anything about 2020, it is that it was much different because of the coronavirus pandemic, and the pandemic led to changes in income and other aspects of our lives. During this segment of today's program, we'll answer questions about 2020 taxes. This is your opportunity to ask questions. You can call 1-800-729-7532, send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we're at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, I'll slow it down, 1-800-729-7532. Joining us, a pair of certified public accountants, Ben Bostic, director, and Brian Kutz, who is manager of Boyer & Ritter LLC. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Brian Bostic, let me start with you. What are a few of the major changes on the 2020 tax returns?
You said Brian Bostic. It's Ben Bostic.
Ben, I'll I'm sorry. You get all those B's in there. Go ahead, Ben.
All right. So there's, you know, there's several changes. You know, I know we're going to talk a bit about stimulus payments, but the first is, you know, to know that those aren't taxable, so you won't have to worry about paying taxes on those. There's several changes to retirement plans, and you know, there's some general increases, itemized deductions, or standard deductions, and tax rates, but you know, that's pretty inflationary. There is an additional $300 available for cash contributions in addition to your standard deduction. So that's an item, you know, most people will be able to take advantage of.
So Brian, now I do mean Brian Kutz, you know, some of the things that Ben mentioned, let's start with stimulus payments, because obviously this is something that the taxpayers haven't dealt with before. And as Ben mentioned, they are not taxable, but how do stimulus payments, or do they, mean any changes in how someone were to prepare their tax returns?
Well, first off, thanks, Scott, for the opportunity to be on the program this morning. In terms of the stimulus, it's not something, if you've received full payment, that you would need to report on your tax return. If you think you should receive payment, there are ways to correct that with filing of the 2020 tax return with something called the recovery rebate credit.
Well, let's talk. Go ahead.
You would need to know. With that, you would need to know how much of the payment you did, how much of the previous payments you did receive, to be able to look into that credit.
Okay, so explain that a little bit more, because there may be some people who have not even started with preparing their tax returns. But the recovery rebate credit, you touched on it a little bit, but if you could explain a little bit more, Brian, about exactly what it is, how someone were to go about claiming that credit on their tax returns.
Yeah, absolutely. So the recovery rebate credit criteria is similar to the criteria that established the initial stimulus payments. So the difference between the initial stimulus checks and the recovery rebate credit is the recovery rebate credit is based on your 2020 tax return information and income level, whereas your stimulus payments for the first, or, you know, for the first two stimulus payments were based on 2018 or 2019 income levels. There were income phase outs depending on filing status, you know, $75,000 for single filers, $112,500 for head of household, $150,000 for married filing jointly. So if you were not eligible under your 2018 or 2019 limit, you may be eligible based on your 2020 income level. And you can fill out that information on the tax return, and it will calculate what amount of money you potentially could get back in an additional refundable credit. So a refundable credit comes back to you dollar for dollar. It's taken off, you know, after you've calculated your tax, it's a dollar for dollar tax reduction. So anything that is over the amount of tax calculated comes back to you in the form of a refund.
All right. Now that
Scott, if I can
go
add
ahead,
this,
go ahead. Go ahead, Ben.
You know, additional aspect to that would be, you know, if someone had a child during 2020, the IRS wouldn't have known that based on your 2019 tax return. So that credit would also, that calculation in the tax return would also give you an increase. You know, the first round would give you an additional $600 for that child, and you know, potentially another $1,200 on the or another. How much was the second one? It was $600. So an additional $600. So $500 on the first stimulus check and $600 on the second stimulus check if you had a baby during 2020.
Well, you know, I have to say that, you know, with between 2018, 2019, 2020 that Brian just described, there could be some confusion, especially if 2020 is to be considered when many people haven't even filed a 2020 tax return yet. So if you would, Ben, explain that a little bit more. How do you decide, again, whether to use your 2018, 2019, and 2020 incomes for when filing?
Well, the IRS kind of already looked at your 2018 and 2019, and if you got full payment based on that, you can't lose anything for 2020. So really the only factor to consider was, did your 2020 income go down? And by going down, it would have made you eligible for additional credits. So based on the payment you received is probably based on your 2019 tax return. There's no real calculation unless you're kind of considering this newest stimulus payment. And there are some people, I'll say, holding back their tax returns, hoping that they'll be able to get more because their 2019 income was lower than 2020. So really the incentive to file your 2020 tax return is, you know, maybe you were laid off and your income's lower, and as a result, you're going to be eligible for more credit. So you really don't have to worry about the prior years. Like I said, your payment was based on that. But if your 2020 was lower, there's going to be an incentive to file and get that additional credit.
Okay. Here's a question from Gary, who asked, in 2020, I worked for an employer, received unemployment and stimulus payments. I also was self-employed part-time. What information do I need to submit on Schedule C for 2020? Who wants to take that one?
I can jump in, Scott. So for your Schedule C, it's really just your self-employment income. Your wages you received from an employer is going to be on your W-2, and that gets reported that way. And the stimulus check doesn't get reported anywhere other than having to consider it when you see if you're eligible for additional credit. So your 2020 Schedule C will just be your income you earn from your unemployment income or from your self-employment income and whatever deductions you have to offset that income.
If you're just tuning in, our guests are answering your tax questions for 2020. And actually, if you notice that there are a few other years that are mentioned as well, so much is different because of the pandemic during 2020. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. You can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Gentlemen, 10 million people in this country are unemployed. many due to the pandemic when businesses shut down or downsized. Unemployment compensation was, for many people, the only income that they received. Now, this is something a lot of people don't like to hear. Many people were using unemployment compensation for the very first time, may not be familiar with it. That unemployment compensation is taxable, correct, Brian?
Yes, Scott, it's generally taxable at the federal level, but it's not taxable in Pennsylvania.
So how does someone receive a form like a W-2 from the federal government telling them how much unemployment compensation they received during 2020?
Yes, they'll receive a form 1099-G showing the amount of unemployment in box one. And if there was any federal income tax withheld, that will also be reported on that form. And you can, you know, report that as your tax payment. Because if there was no federal income tax withheld, the full amount is taxable and you may have to pay the difference depending on the other items on your tax return.
Is unemployment
again, that was form. Oh, sorry, Scott.
No, go ahead.
That was form 1099-G. 1099-G.
So is unemployment compensation, I mean, is it counted just as regular income like you were working your regular job? I mean, taxed at the same rate, or is there any difference with income from unemployment compensation?
It'd be included taxed at the same rate, considering, you know, the other sources of income, but it is taxed the same way.
Ben,
but unlike self-employment income, you don't have to pay self-employment taxes or anything like that. It's kind of the same as I was just say interest income, because there's no reduced rate for that. It's your ordinary income tax rate.
Ben, you know, obviously there are a lot of people that have taken a reduction in their incomes and may not have a lot of money to begin with, even for the basics, the essentials. What if someone owes and they have no money to be able to pay the IRS? How can they go about that?
Well, there, as always, you can set up an installment agreement with the IRS. You kind of lay it out all for them and say, here's what I have and here's what I expect to earn in future time periods. And they'll try and work with you to come up with a payment plan that works for you. But unfortunately, it is taxable, so that the tax is due eventually.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guests are answering your tax questions today. Ben Bostic is a CPA and director, and Brian Kutz is a CPA and manager of Boyer and Ritter LLC. If you have a question, 1-800-729-7532, or you can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number 1-800-729-7532. We have a question from Josie who asks, many individuals believe that if you receive the stimulus payment, you will not be receiving a tax refund this year. Can you clarify this information? Gentlemen?
So, Josie, the stimulus is not tied to your refund. That money is not taxable, but it also does not reduce your refund. You would take into account your other information on your tax return, calculate your tax as you normally would. If you have, for example, W-2 and withholding is greater than your tax due, you would still get that money back. The stimulus does not impact your refund negatively.
Because there are so many changes this year, what about refunds and the timing of refunds? Will it be the same amount of time to get a refund? Will it take longer, maybe even shorter if you file electronically? What about the refunds and the timing of it, Brian?
Yeah, so one of the things that you can do to increase the speed of your refund is file electronically. That helps with the processing time. You know, the IRS had a huge backlog of paper filed returns from last year, and obviously with the COVID pandemic, they were dealing with a lot. But most taxpayers can receive the refunds within 21 days.
At the IRS, from what I understand, has greatly encouraged people to file electronically this year. Is that correct?
Yes. It always helps in terms of in processing, that if you can file electronically, that's usually the easiest and fastest way to get your return processed.
And I think that there have been so many problems with the U.S. mail this year that there may be a lot of people who would be concerned about the timeliness of getting it, that it actually makes it to the IRS and they get a refund back. Now, that's not talking, that's no disrespect toward the Postal Service, but we know that they have been swamped over the past year and there have been cutbacks. Let's take a phone call from Doug in Mechanicsburg. Doug, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. Love your program.
Thank you.
Scott, my son he's been on a payment program with the IRS for the past few years, and he didn't receive either stimulus package, and we assume, but we don't know for sure, whether the IRS just took those stimulus payments due to the fact that he owes back taxes. Do your guests, would they know the answer to that?
Ben, what about that? Would the IRS take that stimulus as payment?
So the IRS has several resources on their website where you're able to check the status of your payment. There were certain items they were allowed to garner stimulus payments for. I'm not positive whether back taxes was one of those items, but if you use the where's my stimulus check function of the IRS website, it should tell you what the status of that payment was. And, it should either say that it was, transferred to pay that balance, or it may say that the calculation was zero. And if that's the case on his 2020 tax return, he would claim that recovery rebate credit that Brian talked about earlier. But you're going to have to check with the IRS website. They have pretty good resources on the status of those payments.
Now, Doug, hang on for just a minute, because Ben, I know of some people who have done that and didn't get a lot of satisfaction, weren't able to get their questions answered as far as where their what the status of their stimulus payment was, or the status of a refund. Has that improved?
I'd like to say yes, but probably not. And depending on what happens with this latest round of stimulus, that may to be honest, become worse as a result of them having to handle those next round of stimulus payments. But the IRS continues to try and improve that process. Unfortunately, you can call the IRS, but you're going to need to wait a while to actually speak with somebody if you're even able to reach somebody.
Doug, unfortunately, not a good answer for your son there, but hopefully the website has improved and he can get some information. Thanks for your call, Doug. Don has a question. He says, I skipped taking my required minimum distribution on my IRAs for 2020 as allowed under the CARES Act. Do I need to report this on my taxes? If so, how do I report it?
So, Scott, for that, you will actually your 1099-R, which is what your retirement account sends you to report the payments you received, it will reflect the payments you actually received. So as you mentioned, the CARES Act did allow people to stop taking their required minimum distributions during 2020. So whatever payments you received will be reported as retirement payments on your 1099-R. So there's no additional work that needs to be done. Your 1099-R will reflect whatever you actually received.
Mm-hmm. Brian, let me address this question to you. A large percentage of people are working from home. Can they claim home office expenses?
So we'll have to look at this kind of in two separate categories, general employees, and then we'd be looking at self-employed independent contractors in a separate category. So from a federal standpoint, unfortunately, a couple of years ago when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was passed, this suspended the business use of home deduction for employees. So if you received a W-2, unfortunately, you can't take a benefit on the federal return for any home office expenses. Self-employed taxpayers and independent contractors are still potentially eligible for this deduction. Kind of the key pieces are that you have a place exclusively and regularly as a principal place of business in the home. And then you'd look at different expenses that are eligible, and you have a couple different options. There's a regular method where you can take the actual expenses. You would look at your direct business expenses, and you can allocate indirect expenses, say a utility, mortgage interest, real estate taxes, based on the percentage of your home that is used for your business, and come up with that amount. There's also a safe harbor simplified option that allows you to take the square footage of your home office times a rate, you know, up to 300 square feet for a maximum deduction of $1,500. And the reason some people will elect that is because the record keeping requirements on the regular method can be a little, you know, burdensome, and the simplified option might be easier for them.
So, but just to be clear, you have to be self-employed for that. If you receive a W-2, you're not eligible.
For the federal return, yes. You may be able to take some unreimbursed business expenses on the Pennsylvania return as an employee. Mm-hmm. Some of these expenses could include certain mobile phone uses, uniforms, tools, office supplies. The important thing here to note as an employee, it's actual amounts paid. It cannot be estimated or guessed. It must be unreimbursed and necessary for you to complete the functions of your job. So some taxpayers are actually reaching out to their employers to get them to write a letter that they were required to work from home, just to show that they were required to use the home for the purpose of their job.
Let's take a phone call from Michael in Anvil. Michael, you're on Smart Talk.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Yes. I have a question regarding the stimulus. I don't know if you can answer it. I was over the adjust to gross, so I didn't get any stimulus at all. This year, when I do my taxes, I'll be below $75,000. Are they going to be using, and I don't know, when they pass the stimulus, they're going to be using your recent taxes or your taxes from last year?
Good question. Ben, what about that?
So it's going to depend on when you actually file that tax return. So as far as your prior stimulus payments, when you file your 2020 tax return, you'll be able to claim a credit for the stimulus payment you didn't receive in 2020, which is kind of what Brian was talking about earlier. This newest round of stimulus that isn't passed yet, they're going to look at whatever if you have your 2019 If your 2020 tax return is not filed, they're going to go back to your 2019, and you probably won't receive a stimulus payment with this newest round. But once you file your 2020 tax return, they may send out a check, or it may be, you know, you kind of have to follow the process again in 2021 to say, I should have received the credit based on my 2020 tax return. And you'll have to receive your stimulus payment at that time.
Here's a question from John in Chambersburg. He says, I didn't receive the first stimulus check, but I did receive the second. Should I expect to get the third? And can I claim on my 2020 taxes the credit for the missed first stimulus check? I won't file my 2020 return until April 15th, so the IRS will go off my 2019 taxes. And that's a question.
So without seeing the 2019 tax return, I can't explain why you didn't receive your first one, but you did receive the second. I assume they based your first stimulus check based on your 2018 tax return, because your 2019 tax return wasn't accessible to them yet, which is why you received your second stimulus check. So on your 2020 tax return, you will claim the credit for your stimulus check that wasn't received, and presumably you would receive this third stimulus payment, because if it goes back to your 2019 tax return, and I'm assuming that's under the threshold because you did receive the second stimulus check, you should get that. But you know, I'm kind of guessing a little bit here based on the information you provided.
Gentlemen, there are a lot of people in a situation where half the year or a portion of 2020, they were working at their regular jobs. Then maybe they were laid off. They lost their jobs, maybe started their own business, or, you know, were freelancing, gig working. And then there were children in college who were home a portion of the year during 2020. Can those children be claimed as dependents?
So, Scott, for them, it's going to be able to claim someone as a credit, you have to provide more than half of their support. And the rules get a little bit complicated. So the answer is maybe. So it really just depends on the amount of support, and the support gets calculated, you know, sometimes based on student loans and, you know, the child's income. So it's not a real straightforward answer. You probably have to look at your specific facts and circumstances and work with the tax advisor, or you know, potentially answer all the questions in TurboTax or something like that to see what kind of answer you get. But there is potential there that you can claim them as a dependent if certain thresholds are met.
Are there age limits on that?
Well, if they're older than 17, the credit is only there's another dependent credit for $500. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act took away personal exemptions, so if you're married filing jointly, you're not going to get any additional benefit from an older dependent other than potentially that $500 credit if you could claim them as a dependent. But it is also going to, you know, it could negatively impact their personal tax return, especially if the child worked, because if they're being claimed as a dependent, it can alter their personal tax return.
Jerry has a question, says, I received my stimulus payment in the form of a debit card and no longer have a record of the amount. How can I find out what the amount of the payment was?
So, again, Jerry, for that instance, it'd be going on to the IRS website, trying to go to the My Account data and seeing if you can, you know, they should have a record of payments sent out, and that would be the best way to find that information.
Okay. You know, one of you mentioned early on about the retirement savings. Are there any changes this year for people who withdrew money from their retirement savings? Ben?
Yes. So, Scott, there was two changes to retirement accounts. The SECURE Act is what actually moved the required minimum distribution age from 70 to 72, and it made a couple other changes. But then the CARES Act said you don't have to take required minimum distributions during 2020, and it also created a separate provision that allows you to take a COVID-related withdrawal. And the unique thing about that is if you're under 59 and a half, you aren't subject to the 10% penalty that you would normally incur if you tap your retirement account before you're reaching the retirement age. And it gets a little bit better too, because you can actually spread out that income over 3 years. So if you took out $100,000 with a COVID-related withdrawal, you don't have to pay tax on the entire $100,000 during 2020. You can stretch that out over 3 years, and there's a separate form to file for that. But there's one more item related to that. You can actually repay that within 3 years and not have to pay any tax on it. You will have to pay, you know, tax on the one third during 2020. But if you end up repaying the entire withdrawal back over the within 3 years, you can actually amend that prior returns and get that taxes paid on those withdrawals. So that's a pretty good incentive, or it allows people to really not be penalized for having to tap their retirement account during, you know, a difficult year. Hmm.
Gentlemen, a lot of questions, and you know, maybe we'll have another program where we try to answer even more questions as we get closer to April 15th. Ben Bostic is a CPA and director, and Brian Kutz is CPA and manager of Boyer & Ritter LLC. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
We're getting signals from MRO. Tango Delta.
Touchdown confirmed. Perseverance safely on the surface of Mars, ready to begin seeking the sands of past life.
That was the audio from NASA of the historic landing of the spacecraft Perseverance and its rover on the planet Mars last month. Well, I guess this is March now. In late January, the rover will search for signs of ancient life while gathering rocks and soil for eventual testing back on Earth. We are honored to have one of the engineers who worked on this project. Alan Chen is a systems engineer and Mars 2020 entry, descent, and landing lead with the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Alan Chen, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me on.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. So, Alan Chen, how significant is this mission?
I think this mission is part of the beginning of this grand relay race, where we're going to seek the signs of past life on Mars and try to bring that evidence back home to Earth. So I think this is really the biggest thing we've ever done in trying to go to Mars and bring something back.
But, you know, one of the things that struck me about this, as someone who grew up in the Apollo age, when every mission got a lot of media attention, a lot of television coverage, is that this mission got a lot of that same type coverage. Why is it so different?
I think that people are still looking for an understanding of what we can really do, and try looking for inspiration about the horizons of what's possible. I think, you know, Mars is always on people's mind. It's a planet that's very much like Earth, that started off very much like Earth, and captures people's imagination. It's our next door neighbor. What if it had signs of past life? I think those are all great questions that people are interested in.
You know, there's so much that we could talk about, like what we've learned up until now and what we hope to learn. But when you say that Mars is very much like Earth, For most people, when they see those images, they see that video, they say, well, that doesn't look like Earth. It looks more like the moon, maybe not the same color, but, you know, a lot of geographic, a lot of rocks and that kind of thing. So how is it similar to Earth?
Well, Mars and Earth started out very much, very similar, and that's what our past missions have shown us, that, you know, both Mars and Earth are about 4.5 billion years old. And about 3.5 or 4 billion years ago, both were habitable, that they were both warm, had water, and the ingredients and the building blocks for life. And that's about the time that life took hold here on Earth. So the question then becomes, if it took hold here on Earth, did it take hold also on Mars? And can we find evidence of that? Certainly, Mars's path has diverged since then. The atmosphere has been stripped away by the solar wind, and it's become a much more desert-like, cold and desiccate place. But the questions remain, right? Does our nearest neighbor in the universe harbor the signs of past life like it started here on Earth?
I want to correct myself. I said late January. It actually was February 18th when Perseverance landed on Mars. Now, you've touched on what you hope to learn, but what specifically? One of the things that I think is fascinating is that Mars seems to have evidence or has evidence of lots of water in the past, maybe that could have supported life. So what specifically are you hoping to learn with this mission?
Yeah, so we certainly have plenty of evidence that Mars had plenty of past water. And in fact, the place we're going, the place that we've landed, Jezero Crater, you can kind of see looks very much like things that you might see on Earth. That it's clearly an ancient river delta. There's this crater that existed from an impact crater. We have a river coming into it and an outflow coming out of it. And in the one place where the river came in, we see this perfectly preserved delta that's sitting there, the deposits of that river runoff into what was then a lake back in the day. The deltas that form at the edges of rivers are great places to preserve the signs of past life. I don't think there's a delta here on Earth where you can't find some signs of life. And so that's what we're after. We're after trying to find places where life could have existed on Mars and where it's been preserved over the millennia for us to find that evidence.
What kind of life?
And we're talking about ancient microbial life at the time, right? This is the type of life that would have existed here on Earth 3.5 or 4 billion years ago. I don't know if you've ever been out to Yellowstone, but think about things like on the edge of those prismatic basins, those bacterial mats. Those are the types of microbial life that we think that might have existed on Mars.
You know, one of the things, the characteristics of Mars as well as the volcanoes, how do we know what's from water and maybe what was from magma from a volcano?
Yeah, that's a great question, especially with all the missions we've done over time. There's a couple of things, of course, presence of volcanic types of rocks, which we can see the mineral signatures of from space, and of course also on the ground once we're there with our instruments. But we chose our land site based on the chemical composition of what we can see from space. And then we've also managed to ground truth those things with rovers and landers that we put on the surface of Mars. So we have a pretty good idea of what types of minerals are there and what's volcanic and what's not.
What kind of those minerals that what are much different than what are here on Earth than that is on Mars? What are some of the minerals that are you find more so than others?
I think one of the key exciting things is that it's not that different, except for the fact that here on Earth, there's lots of life that kind of and erosion and things that disturb the surface and make it very hard actually here on Earth to find those signs of past life. The desiccate and dry nature of Mars kind of lets those things exist. The downside is, of course, radiation, that radiation can destroy those signs of life, which is why we're looking to bring back core samples and to go to places where there are kind of different levels that we can access, so cliff faces and where we can traverse up different areas to try to get to different levels of Mars and different parts of its history.
You know, obviously, this is not the first mission to Mars. There is other equipment, or has been for the past 2 decades, for the most part, on Mars. How has each Mars rover mission dovetailed on the last?
That's a great question. And this is, I think it's not just the rover missions, but also the orbiters. You know, kind of if you go way back to the Viking era, NASA kind of swung for the fences and kind of in some sense came up a bit empty. In searching for signs of life directly. But since then, since the late 90s, we've been in a much more methodical plan, where the kind of first mantra of the Mars program was find the water, right? Follow the water. It was, if there's life like we know it here on Earth, then there must have, then it would need water, or at least past water, to be there. So that was kind of the early missions, the early orbiters and early landers and rovers in the late 90s were looking for the signs of water. Okay, check. We found that there was water in the past and it was plentiful on Mars. The next question then became, okay, there was water. Were there the building blocks of life there? Were there, were, was there habitability? Were there organic compounds that we can find that evidence of that existed in the past? I mean, that's what the Curiosity mission that I worked on was about, and it was guided by the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter mission as well. So those missions succeeded as well. Check. We found the signs of that that in the past Mars was habitable. So not only it had water, but also had these building blocks of life, these organics and other potential chemical needs for life. So now we're going, now we're stepping up again to, okay, it was habitable, there was water. Can we seek the signs of past life? Can we find any evidence that there was life in these habitable areas?
Hmm. How has the technology changed for each rover mission? And how does that get us closer to landing people on Mars?
Well, I was the entry, descent, and landing lead for this mission, and I worked on the entry, descent, and landing team for Curiosity. So this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. I think the biggest thing that we've done is increase the mass of what we can land, how big and how heavy the stuff we can land is. The Sojourner rover, which was on Pathfinder, was the size of a microwave, and pretty light, you know, down in around 10 kilos, 20-ish pounds or so. When we stepped up to Spirit and Opportunity in those rovers, those went up to about 170 kilos or so. And then as we stepped on to Curiosity, that was 900 kilos. And now we're up to Perseverance, which is 1,028 kilos. So we keep increasing our ability to land bigger and heavier things. We've gone from a microwave size thing with Sojourner to something that's pretty close to the size of a small SUV with Perseverance. So landing bigger and better things, and then in more and more and more precisely and in more dangerous places is something that we've been able to do as well. Before, we could land anywhere within a 300 kilometer-ish long area. Now we can land right in the middle of this tiny crater in about an 8 kilometer long area among lots of things, lots of landing hazards that would have killed plenty of past landers. So we have the ability to land bigger and better things more precisely and in the places we really want to go to.
When you say landing those, landing that equipment precisely now, I mean, that is one of the most amazing parts of this, is that, from what I understand, a lot of times you as an engineer or you at NASA will not know exactly how dangerous it is until you get close to the surface. Can you explain that?
Things have changed a little bit. Back in the day, that was certainly true. Viking didn't even really know what Mars looked like until it went into orbit first. And even then, didn't have cameras good enough to see hazards on the scale of a lander. But now that we have more orbiters and more experience with Mars, we actually have the ability to image the site very well with the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. And that's allowed us to do a couple things. Number one, that's allowed us to map out everything that's pretty much everything that we can see that's a hazard to the rover. That includes rocks and slopes and dune fields that even if we landed safely, we wouldn't be able to get out of. So once we've had that map, we've also given Perseverance something new, the new system called Terrain Relative Navigation that allowed her, now I have to use the past tense since it's already worked a couple weeks ago, but allowed her to come down, take pictures of the ground while she was coming down on parachutes, still going almost 200 miles an hour toward the ground, and match those pictures up to the onboard map that she had. That allowed her to fly to safe spots nearby and not fly to where we had already identified hazards. So we kind of did the work for her to figure out what was hazardous. She just had to figure out where she was and what she could get to. And that worked perfectly to save the mission for us a couple weeks ago.
You know, I have to say that, maybe for me, maybe this is when we talk about the technology, that it is not as complicated as many other parts of the mission, but the cameras that are used, the video, the still photography, the images that we see. And again, as someone who grew up in the Apollo age where everything was black and white and fuzzy and all that, I mean, it is just incredible the images that we see from the surface of Mars, and even with the landing itself. I mean, that technology has just progressed so much. It's incredible.
Yeah, one of the big upgrades we made from Curiosity to Perseverance was for the rover to put off a lot of new higher resolution and color imagers, but also for the entry, descent, and landing system. We've previously had some cameras on the way down that were pretty low rate. We took some pictures after the heat shield came off with Curiosity with an instrument that only took pictures at about 3.8 frames per second. But now we have high rate images that you might have seen that are high resolution and 30 frames per second for the most part and in color. For the parachute deployment, we actually had those up at 75 frames per second because the parachute inflates so quickly. It inflates in 0.7 seconds. If you blink, you'll miss it. And so it's been exciting to take people along for the ride, to let people see what it's really like to land on Mars. And for us to see it too. We've always kind of just imagined what it would look like and seen it in our simulations. But it's another thing to see it for real.
Can you describe, this is from a listener, can you describe the helicopter that accompanied Perseverance?
Sure. The helicopter is named Ingenuity, and we're getting ready to hopefully fly that pretty soon in the next month or two. That spacecraft, that Ingenuity helicopter, is about 4 pounds, so it's pretty small. When it's sitting on the ground, it goes up to a height of about 1.5 feet, 1.6 feet or so. But the body itself is really small. It's kind of like a 6-inch cube. That's the body of the rover, of the helicopter Ingenuity. It's got long helicopter blades it's got two blades that are counter-rotating that spin up to about 2,400 RPM. And they have to be pretty big relative to the size of the helicopter. They're about 4 feet long, those blades. The Martian atmosphere is really thin. It's about 1% the density of Earth's. So it's kind of like trying to fly your helicopter at like 130,000 feet here on Earth. So it's really difficult to get off the ground. So that's why the helicopter's really small. And those blades are pretty big relative to to that helicopter's weight and have to spin really fast.
You know, when you talk about solar winds, I can't help but trying to compare the Martian atmosphere to the Earth's atmosphere. You say 1%, 130,000 feet, what it would be like above the Earth. I mean, what is that atmosphere like? I mean, can you describe it?
Yeah, I mean, I think chemically, certainly we can describe it. You know, Earth here, of course, we have mostly nitrogen and, you know, 70% nitrogen, 25% oxygen and other. Instead, on Mars, it's 95% carbon dioxide and 5% other. So the atmosphere composition is different, but in some ways still similar, right, in the way it behaves. The big difference is that density, right, that the density is so thin that wind gusts that would here knock you over on Earth won't do much to you on Mars. I guess that's the part of the Martian that I don't like of that movie, is that you're not going to be blowing around big things like that because the wind could be howling and you could barely feel it. Because the density is so much lower.
That is hard to imagine. But I want to get back to the helicopter because there was a follow-up question. How will that helicopter be used? Will it be flying around Mars and taking photographs?
The helicopter is a tech demonstration for us. It's really kind of an exploration of a new way to explore Mars. So we're planning a couple of test flights. It will take images. It's got a couple cameras on it. To not only take images of the site, but also to help it land in safe places. Right now we're just envisioning it as a tech demo and not necessarily something that will follow us around or anything like that. But it'll give us an idea of what's possible, whether it's possible to do this controlled flight on another planet where the atmosphere is so thin.
We only have about a minute or left, and we probably could talk all day. This is so fascinating. But Alan Chen, what's next? I mean, obviously, everyone thinks about a manned mission to Mars, but what's next? How far ahead would a manned mission be?
I think the first steps for us really are about showing that we can bring things back. You know, just like with people, I don't think most people would want to go on a one-way mission. We'd want to be able to bring things back. So the first step along that path is really what we're doing with Perseverance and then with the Mars sample return campaign. So Perseverance will go find the signs of past life if it can, and that evidence of that, and store those in these rock cores that we hope to bring back to Earth. I think demonstrating that we can bring something to Mars, do something there, and then return it to Earth safely is a big piece of what we need to show for the future.
Alan Chen is a systems engineer and Mars 2020 entry, descent, and landing lead with the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Mr. Chen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.